WTF1 presents Hot Takes Wednesday. Hello and welcome back to Hot Takes Wednesday. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and well, this is a very special edition of Hot Takes Wednesday, the show with your spicy takes and our even spicier opinions, because we haven't got another member of the WTF1 team with us on this occasion. We've got a very special guest with us on this one. And joining me on the couch on this occasion is Formula One performance coach, Michael Italiano. Michael, good to see you. How's it going?
Hey, Dre. Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate. Just got back from Miami. So it's been a good week. I'm looking forward to a week off now.
I mean, 5 races in 6 weeks. I mean, that cannot be easy. I mean, I know you're a very fit man, and I know you're in peak physical condition. But even for you, it must be hard doing, you know, cramming that many races in such a tight space. I mean, we've got a week off, but we've got a triple header after this.
Yeah, it doesn't get easier. I mean, the only thing that gets easier is the flying. You know, no more long haul flights for a while.
Oh, that's good. That is useful.
Yeah, no jet lag, but. Yeah, I'm not going to say that I've got it hard, because the driver's definitely got it more difficult than us.
100%, yeah, that, without question. Now, for those who maybe don't know you quite so well, you know, you are an F1 performance coach, and like, that is quite a unique role. We don't hear a lot about your sort of role within an F1 team very often. It's a bit low profile. So what exactly, for those who don't know, is your role within an F1 team? How close are your ties with the drivers, and what's it like over a week, a race weekend, etc.?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing, the obvious one, is race support. So that's probably the number one role, where we're required to come to every race and provide race support to your allocated driver. So for me, Yuki, I'll make sure that everything's kind of aligned for him over the race weekend. So I'll send through like his nutritional plan to the chefs on the Monday or Tuesday, so they can prepare the ingredients and, you know, talk about anything that they need specifically. I'll set up our race room. So, you know, get our massage bed ready, get all his uniforms aligned, make sure we've got 5 pairs of everything. So he's, so we've got fresh, you know, so he's got a fresh suit for every session, just little things like that. Right. Because you want to make sure that everything's aligned, so he doesn't have to think. Everything's just kind of very seamless for him. Hmm. You know, I prepare his supplementation every day, so making sure that it's all ready to go, so every morning he can just grab it and take it, doesn't have to think about it. Do his helmets. So, you know, sometimes, especially over Miami, you know, preparing a dark visor and a light medium visor in case, you know, we had a cloudy day, and we did on the Sunday. We had to quickly change helmets on the grid. So you want to prepare, you know, 2 to 3 helmets depending on the weather, because the weather can change quite quickly on you in some places. So yeah, there's actually quite a lot to do at the track from my standpoint. Obviously warming them up as well. So I'll warm up Yuki before every session. And that involves like a bit of massage, and then just pre-activating some of the common muscle groups that we use in the car. So we use some bands and do some dynamic work, and then we do some reactions in the room, and then off we go to the garage. So yeah, and then probably the last thing is probably like scheduling as well. You know, one thing, I guess, he just wants to go to bed and be told what time he needs to wake up and what time he has to be in the car. So, you know, that even from a scheduling standpoint, I'll be on it and be like, yep, cool, I want you up at this time. We're going to do 30 minutes of mobility, and then we're going to be in the car for 9, because we have to be at the track for 9:30, because your first meet and greet is at 10. So like, yeah, you're there for him, so that way he can just ask you the questions, and you're the person that hopefully has all the answers.
Yeah, so it's amazing. So you're basically just lining up all these hoops for your driver to jump through, just to make that weekend experience as smooth as possible.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want them exerting unnecessary energy when they don't need to, right? You just want them sleeping well, in a very good mindset, and you want to make sure that they're just, yeah, like I said, like, you want the weekend to be seamless for them, so they can just rock up, do their thing, and hopefully perform at a very, very high level. So that's kind of like my job in a nutshell. Obviously, there's a lot more that goes on outside of race weekends, where we're training a lot, and, you know, structuring training blocks to ensure that he's still hitting his fitness goals as well. And from a mental aspect as well, there's a couple of things we work on as well, where specifically with Yuki, where, you know, we can definitely improve on from a mental standpoint that we do outside of the race weekends. So It's definitely a full-time job.
Oh, 100%, I can imagine. I think it's a bit more than a full-time job if you're getting flights and it's just rampant wall to wall, everything has to be in place, all that planning. It sounds crazy.
I think honestly, I almost feel like it prepares you well for parenthood, you know? Because in a way you feel like a parent sometimes, you know, making sure that everything's aligned for them, like, you know, the meals are ready for them, that, you know, they're feeling good, they're happy, you know, you're very self, like you're living a very selfless job, right? Because, you
Yeah.
know, they come first, not you.
Of
So
course.
it's I mean, I'll let you know when I have my first kid whether that's accurate or not, but
We'll bring you back and we'll compare.
yeah, done.
I had to ask as well because our backgrounds, we were both office people. I was a bookies guy growing up, and that was my office for many, many years. How do you all of a sudden make that leap from, that 9 to 5 office life to being a part of the F1 traveling circus? Because that is a hell of a transition.
Yeah, I won't lie. It was probably, I'm going to say, probably the busiest 6 months of my life. So to give people a bit of a perspective on what I was doing, I was in a full-time role, working in mining in Perth, WA, and I couldn't just leave my job and then walk into being a coach or starting off as like a personal trainer because I had no clients. And I had a house at a time, I had the mortgage. So, you know, the standard financial burdens that everyone's kind of, so I was like, what do I do? So, I decided that I'm going to go to the gym 6 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. and work for 2.5 hours in the gym and trying to build clients. And then from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., I'll work my 8 hours in the office. And then I'll go straight at 5 p.m. back to the gym and work there till 8:30 p.m.
Oh, wow.
And I did that for 3 to 4 to probably 5 months of literally just working 14-hour days. My
Wow.
office job didn't know I was doing that.
Oh, wow. I can imagine as well. So, Michael, how come coming into work so tired?
Yeah, but you know, I was still doing my 40-hour week, so I made sure that I wasn't letting my actual work slip. But then I was going into gym pre and post those hours, and eventually I think I got to like 15 clients, and I was like, okay. And then you do your financial maths, and you're like, okay, I can live off this for 3 months, but then hopefully by then you're building from there, and then I eventually I made the transition that way, and resigned from my job and went straight full time into coaching. So yeah, it was definitely tough, but all of a sudden, it just moved so quick. You know, I was coaching for 2 years, and then I got an opportunity with Daniel Ricciardo to come on board in the Formula One circuit. So, part of me, like a lot of people around me, including my parents, didn't want me to transition. They're like, you know, you've
Oh,
got a good
wow.
job, you've got a stable income, you know, there's a lot of promise to move up the ranks. You know, what are you doing? Which I understand, right? Like they're looking out for you. They're
Of course.
not coming from a bad place. They just want to make sure that their kids are looked after. So, yeah, I was quite stubborn and went ahead with it. And I'm so glad I did and stuck to my guns because I never would have dreamt that I'd be literally here in 5 years' time.
I mean, let's be honest with each other here. Working in Formula One as a performance coach sounds a lot cooler than mining, though, right? Let's be real here.
Yeah, no, 100%, and not wearing the black business shoes and wearing some comfy sneakers every day definitely helps.
100%. I can only imagine. So, should we talk a little F1, Michael?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Let's talk a little F1. For those who are new to Hot Takes Wednesday, because I always say every podcast is someone's first, here's how it goes. You, the wonderful WTF1 audience, we put out a special request for some of you guys to send in your takes to us and Michael to talk a little bit about F1 in general, your hot takes regarding the sport at large, and then we'll have a little bit of a back and forth between us, and then we'll score that take on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being that we strongly disagree, 5 being that we strongly agree with the take. So we'll have a little bit of back and forth on that. If both of us score a 1 or a 5 on a topic, it'll go into our special vault for the hottest and coldest takes of the year for 2023. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a couple of more entries into that file by the end of this recording. So let's go into Hot Takes Wednesday. Our first take comes from a friend of the show, Jonty's Corner. And Jonty's Corner on Twitter has sent us in, quote, "No one will remember this F1 season by 2027. I love that we started nice and soft on this one to start us off. I know podcasts are not a visual medium normally, but you could see Michael gritting his teeth as I was reading that one out. John T. Torres saying, "No one will remember details of this F1 season by 2027. I'm going to assume this is probably quite cynical, Michael, because of, you know, let's be honest, it's a bit dominant for your older sibling team Red Bull at the moment. It's they've won every race so far. Maybe not the most thrilling of on track action either. But what have you made of it from the other side of the paddock so far?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm obviously purely focusing on the process with Yuki. We've had an amazing five races.
Oh, I'd agree.
So
more on him later.
Yeah, so like from my standpoint, you know, it's a very significant year for me personally because it's my first year with Yuki and this is a very important year for him. I would have to disagree with that. Only because, and this is my reason, is because I think Red Bull are going to break record after record this year. So I don't think this year will be forgotten. Yes, it might be the most boring year, but I don't think it'll be forgotten. I think it'll be one of the most iconic years of just record breaking from a pure dominance perspective. Like, yes, we've seen it from Mercedes, but I think Red Bull this year have taken it to another level. Like, Alonso was 23 seconds off Max, and let's be honest, Max started P9. So
yeah,
if Max was P2 or P1 from qualifying, he probably would have won it by 40 seconds. So that shows you how far first is from second. So I'm going to disagree with that take. I do think it's going to be remembered purely because of the dominance of Red Bull.
I love the angle that you went there. Not, it's like, oh, this is boring, this is dreadful. No. We're going to break records this year. I love that. That is very slick, Michael. I do respect it. I mean that in a good way. I mean, I like where you're coming from. I mean, maybe from an entertainment standpoint, it's not going to be the most captivating thing in the world. And, you know, that's, I think, the nature of sports sometimes in general. I mean, I'm talking to an Australian. I'm a cricket fan. I know exactly how this feels on many occasions, let me tell you. But, yeah, I actually do get what you're saying in the sense of maybe Red Bull runs the table, which has never been done in an F1 season before. I think they've got a real, genuine opportunity to win every single race this year. It's going to take probably some major shenanigans for them not to win a race. Because even if Max has a bad day, Sergio is good enough to still finish second every week. And if Max has an off day, Perez has gone on to win a couple of these so far this year already. So maybe that will stand out. I mean, I know it's not the most thrilling thing in the world, Michael, but you know, you got to tip a little bit of a hat to just what they're doing at the moment, right?
No, you have to. Like, all respect to them, they've been chasing tails. They've been chasing Mercedes' tail for 7 years, right? So you got to realize, like, they've been hungry for so long, and now they're finally on top. So they're not going to slow down, right? But yeah, look, I think, you know, you got to take what you're given. I think the Red Bull dominance, you have to appreciate. You know, hopefully Sergio puts up a fight. Like, he's putting up a really good fight. So maybe there is an interesting championship race by the end of the year that could still bring some entertainment. And, you know, there's obviously the obvious first race in Vegas. So I guess there's a bit of intrigue there as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So there's still a little bit to look forward to, I hope.
I love that he said, "I hope," at the end of that sentence.
Yeah. But I guess from my standpoint, like, you know, we're AlphaTauri, we're bringing a big upgrade in Imola. So I'm really excited for this year. I really am. Like, again, this is purely from where I stand, is like just helping Yuki progress and, you know, I guess just trying to sustain himself as a top driver, which is something that we're trying to achieve right now.
Absolutely. And like I said, we had to pick one Yuki take in there, and there is one coming up later. I can spoil a little bit of that coming up, but are you going to go 2 on the scale for that one, Michael? That's where I'm going with this. I think you're absolutely right. I think the record breaking side of it, if they run the table, they're going to remember this forever. That's going to be,
yeah,
a plinth, I'd say. So we're both going to go 2 on that one. But thanks for that one, Jonty. Great take. We've got Errol Ardam on Twitter, who sends this take in, says, quote, "The only thing that isn't giving us good races and overtakes is the size of the cars." too big and heavy. Must be a Formula E fan. Errol says, the only thing that isn't giving us good races and overtakes is the size of the cars, too big and heavy. I mean, what do you make of that, Mike? Is the hybrid era causing a problem of how big these cars are? I mean, how are you finding the on-track action? And, you know, you don't have to worry about the team on this one. This is purely you as a fan. I know you've been around a little while now. I'm sure you've seen multiple eras. How do you feel about these cars in general?
Yeah, look, I mean, my opinion is quite, it's quite influenced based on my chat with my drivers.
I'm sure that some of them we're getting some inside the knowledge here. I love it.
Yes, but obviously you kind of want to understand like their opinion and why. So I'm a bit torn here, and I'll tell you why. So like, I agree. I think the cars are too heavy and too big. There's too many blind spots for these guys. So, you know, even off the start line, I think we're seeing a lot of shunts in laps 1 to 3 because they can't see each other. And the truth is, like, they're just assuming, you always just have to assume someone's there. So you just give space. I do think if the cars were lighter and also smaller, where they could actually see, I think you'd see some probably more aggressive and better racing. But then on the contrary, I think the reason why they're heavier is because of the safety standards. So, you know, they're trying to make the cars a lot more safer with like the halo. And so like that obviously increases the weight of the car. So it's a tough one because like, yes, it does skew the entertainment factor, but they're also doing some really, really positive things when it comes to increasing the safety of this sport, because as we all know, it's a very dangerous sport.
Indeed. And, you know, I think I speak for a lot of people where I say I will happily sacrifice a little bit of entertainment value if I know there's a much greater chance of getting everybody back home after a race.
100%.
Okay. 100%. And yeah, I mean, it's an intriguing perspective because you've already had a couple of, you know, lap one spills. I mean, your home Grand Prix in Australia, we had a couple of restarts, and that last one was we had three separate incidents all go down at the same time off the same restart. And everybody complained a little bit about cold tires and it was a bit low in the sun. But and even Miami, last week, we had Yuki's teammate Nick unfortunately have a bit of a collision with Lando. And Hamilton, I don't know if you noticed it on the radio, but Hamilton thought he actually hit someone off that lap one start, but actually he didn't. So maybe I think you've got a lot of validity to what you're saying about lack of visibility in general, which probably isn't helping.
Yeah, exactly. They honestly don't see each other. And then in a wet race with the spray that these cars produce, that's even worse. They're literally going in blind. So yeah, like I said, there's a tough one. There's definitely pros and cons for both. That's a very open-ended question. I think you could go both ways on that one.
Definitely. Me personally, I don't think the ride heights are helping. I think that you know, we're in that ground effect era again now. We've dabbled back into that phase of car development. I thought last year we actually had quite a few very, very good races, even if there wasn't maybe the intrigue of a title fight underneath it all. I actually thought the overall quality of racing is good. I think that we've actually slipped a little bit. I mean, has Yuki spoken to you about dirty air and following a little bit? Because it seems like it's a little bit worse than what we've had in like compared to last year, for instance.
Yeah, I think last year was a lot easier to follow. That was kind of, I think, the genuine consensus. But I think, yeah, this year, I'll be honest, it's been not too bad. I think Yuki had quite a few overtakes on the weekend. So
I noticed, yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad. There were some comments, again, like that the DRS isn't probably as strong as what it is, as what it used to be.
They've shortened a few zones. So, Baku, they took 100 meters off Miami. They took 75 off two of the zones. So
yeah, so you saw that effect big time in Baku. So yeah, whether that's probably not helping from an entertainment factor as well. That's probably also a contributing factor. But yeah, can I sit on the fence with that one? Can I scale it? Like,
can you say three and say? Yeah,
I'll say three.
I think that's valid. I think that's absolutely valid. I think there's a lot of different little elements, and I didn't even consider the visibility angle side of how raceable a car is, because we don't think about that as probably as more casual fans. We sit back and We probably don't even think about things like that. We probably just go, well, how many overtakes did this race have? Or, you know, oh, this DRS is terrible, or this DRS is great and dirty air. But I never actually looked at it from a visibility angle before. And that's actually a very valid point. I might actually agree with you on this one. I was going to go four, but now I've actually come down a bit because hearing your perspective is actually quite interesting. So okay. I think I'm going to go down to a three. I don't normally sit on the fence with takes like this, but I think this one is certainly valid. Thanks for sending that in, Errol. Amy J is next up. Amy J with the take of, F1's popularity in the US has peaked already, and either Miami or Vegas will be dropped from the calendar by 2028. Wow. There's a lot to unpack on that one. One more time from Amy J. F1's popularity in the US has peaked, and either Miami or Vegas will be dropped from the calendar by 2028 after falling ticket sales and prices. Interesting. I mean, what was the buzz like for you in Miami? Because, like, I know the sport were very quick to, you know, jump up and down and say we had 270K. It was 30,000 more than last year. And I didn't notice that on the broadcast. I mean, what was Miami like as a vibe? Because you could tell F1's going big on the American rounds.
Yeah, look, I'm going to be brutally honest. Miami, great place. I thought last year they definitely could have improved a few things, and then they've come in this year and they've made those improvements in the paddock. It was a little bit too condensed. There was a lot of mayhem. You couldn't even walk on the grid after the national anthem. There was that many people on the grid, but this year they made the improvements. I will say, yes, okay, there's a lot of people attending, but I don't really feel the race, like the race intensity and the race atmosphere like you would at a European race. Maybe that's because it doesn't bring the true diehard race fans, and it brings a different type of diverse crowd, which, you know, is okay, which is still good in a way, right? It's bringing different people to the race. I mean, look, I like different experiences, right? So I do like, you know, this is the first race where you're actually in a stadium. I thought it was pretty damn cool, to be honest. And I like coming to America. I think what they do from a sports perspective, I think it's the best in the world. So I strongly disagree with her first phrase where she reckons it's what did Amy say? She said it's going to be forgotten about.
They've already peaked.
I strongly disagree with that. But then her second part, where it talks about either Miami or Vegas to be dropped, I can see Miami being dropped.
Really?
The only reason why I say that is because they've spent a lot of money on this track, and I just don't know if that's going to be sustainable or not. So yes, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those got dropped. I disagree with her first part of her statement, but I kind of agree with her last part. So that might put me on the fence again, but yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you how I feel about it. I mean, from a TV outsider standpoint, from the other side of the paddock, I get the vibe that Miami was more for the influencer and more for the, you know, higher class, maybe not the biggest of diehard race fans. And I think a little bit of that is okay. I mean, that's understandable. Yeah. It's a popular round. It's a social event as much as it is a race weekend. And we're not all diehard race fans. Some people are just here for a good time or here for some entertainment. So I could certainly get that impression. F1 wants to go hard on America. It's more than obvious. They're promoting this race. They're going to Vegas a little bit later this year. We've gone from one US race to three very quickly. Will that hold up? I don't know. I know they were basically giving away tickets by the end because there was discounts galore. I heard they were emailing people quite aggressively in the final days and weeks leading up to the event. That's not a great sign that you're holding steady. I didn't buy. There was 90,000 there on day one. I saw those grandstands. They were half empty on Friday. Maybe they had 90,000 tickets sold, but there was certainly not 90,000 people in the house.
No, trust me, Friday was empty, and I was like, okay, right. Very different to last year.
But thank you for confirming my suspicions, because that's exactly what I thought when I was watching free practice on Friday, because I was like, there's no way 90,000 people rolled up on day one. So
I think they can fit 70,000 in Paddock Club, and that's upstairs, and I can't go there. So unless there was 70,000 up there, which I highly doubt, but
yeah, I'm glad you feel that way. I mean, they could always just go to a different American venue. I know there was rumors about Long Beach over the other side in California. That's certainly a possibility. I mean, Amy's take says by 2028, so you're giving it 5 years. I'm not sure if there's still going to be this level of excitement, whether you're still going to get the big name celebrities, because that was a lot of them down there this week. You had Tyreek Hill, and he was in the Alpine Garage. You had Roger Federer, James Marsden. Did you meet anyone cool?
No, I didn't. I didn't meet them, but yeah, like on the grid, yeah, you see them all. So it's actually pretty cool. I got quite starstruck when I saw Roger. He's bigger idol of mine, but yeah, unless they keep paying the celebrities to come, yeah, it is a tough one, because let's be honest, like, sport in America is massive, and they do sport very well, right? So, you know, if the nation really takes a hold of Formula One, it really could be exponential of the growth there. But yeah, I don't know. I love the OG in Austin. It brings the diehard American fans, and the crowd is just amazing. But yeah, 2028. Oh, what are you going? I'm still a bit torn here.
I'm a bit torn as well. I'm kind of on the fence, because, like, it's hard to predict 5 years out. I'm not sure this holds. I'm leaning towards a green with Amy on this one, so I'm gonna go four on this one. I actually think there is a good chance they might outkick their coverage and start putting some fans off, because I'm a few sports fan. I'll give you an example. I used to watch a lot of mixed martial arts when the UFC was growing. For example, they went from like 12 events a year to 20 to 30 very, very quickly. When you start making fans choose, that's when you start losing people, because they can't afford to keep up with the sport. And having if you're going to choose between Miami and Vegas, I think a lot of people that sit on the fence are going to choose Vegas.
Yep.
Because it's Vegas. That's already a massive tourist spot, probably a bit more than Miami is. So I'm going to go four on this one, Michael. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's where I'm going.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go a four. One other aspect I probably didn't consider is like Drive to Survive. I reckon that will definitely out. And I think when that fizzes out, that will probably affect the American market as well. So yeah, all right, I'm going to go a four as well.
Interesting. I do think that's a very intriguing thing. It's a fantastic take, Amy. A lot to think about there, and there's a lot of different ways you can look at that one. That's a very, very intriguing indeed. I'm curious to see what F1 does, because they've been trying to crack America for years. It's not exactly subtle. I mean, we had proper almost WrestleMania style intros before that race. I've got to ask about that, Mike. Were you a fan of that? Because there's been a lot of talk about that on social media, and we've noticed in the last couple of days. How do you feel about the driver intros, real quick?
I'm not a fan, because it cut our warm up by about 4 or 5 minutes. Because, you know,
that I did hear about this. So I think that's why a lot of the drivers are quite grumpy about it.
Yeah, because it was hot on the grid. So they were standing on the grid for like 6 minutes in this heat. And it's like, guys, you're just like, they're sweating, and it's like it just is not good for them just to prepare. Like, get out of the garage, just stay in the shade. We do like our last little prep drills, and then you just want to go straight into the national anthem, straight in the car. To have them stand out there, no, it was quite an inconvenience from a performance perspective.
I could certainly see why. I mean, there wasn't a lot of interaction. I mean, look, the Americans do pageantry better than almost any country in the world. So, like, and as a big American sports fan, I was completely fine with it. But from a driving and performance standpoint, I can completely see why that might irk some people.
And last bit, the athletes also have to be invested in it, right?
Right, 100%.
Like, you know, if you look at the NBA, when they're calling out their names, the players are invested in it. You know, they're up and about, you know, like, it just felt a bit awkward, because you had half of the drivers weren't really invested, and like, walk past, wave, hurry up. Where some other people were like quite excited about it. So I feel like, yeah, you need to have the athletes invested in it if you're going to do something like that.
100%. I mean, I think it was only maybe three of the 20 that were actually played into. I mean, I know Logan did because it's a home race for him. I know Hamilton's a huge LL Cool J fan, so he was always going to do that. And I think Max did as well, but half of them was just power walking down the line. Where's the car? Where's the anthem spot? And you know, I do respect the fact that your man Yuki did the CR7 celebration as he got out to his spot. That got him some fans, I think. So that was quite a cool gesture. So like, at least Yuki's getting the agenda. I do respect that. Couple more takes to go. We've got one from the Devil's Bean Coffee on Twitter. So Devil's Bean says, if F1 insist on repeating the Baku format, then Friday should be quaddy for Sunday, but the same quaddy used as a reverse grid for the sprint race, and to make it more exciting. I've cut the words out a little bit because it's a little bit wordy, but the general gist, I think, is regarding the sprint shootout, the format change that we had in Baku. So Devil's Bean is suggesting we go more towards something down the reverse grid line. Now, I don't know. To ask you to first and foremost, Michael, how did you feel about the sprint format changing in Baku? Because it was a bit last minute. It was a little bit scrambled together. Like, I'd love to obviously hear a driver's perspective, or if you spoke to Yuki about it as well. I'd love to hear if there was any insight into that, because I think it's a very divisive sort of topic.
Yeah, very divisive. Yuki's a big fan. He was a big fan of it.
Ah, I see.
Liked it. I liked the new format, but in saying that, I wouldn't like that every weekend. I think it's just too much. Not just from the drivers, but also just the teams, like the mechanics. Like, there's just so much more work to do, and I just think you would burn them out, especially under cost caps. You wouldn't be able to, you know, employ more mechanics, so then you could switch them for races. You couldn't do that. So, like, you know, they've already got it tough as it is. So I don't think that's sustainable. So yeah, I do like the odd sprint race here and there. Reverse grid, I'm open to it, because at the end of the day, like, you know, Formula One are trying new things. I watch Formula Two with a lot of interest. I love watching the junior guys come to the ranks. And, you know, in Formula Two, they do reverse grid. And I really like those reverse grid sprint races. It brings out character in the drivers, and you kind of see, like, who does well midfield, who does well when they're in the lead, and when they're not in the lead, how does their driving change? And you actually find out quite a lot about drivers when you put them in different scenarios rather than just always in the front row if you're in a dominant car. So I'm open to seeing that. You know, I think it's definitely a success in F2. And, you know, if that means you can get a little bit more entertainment out of a sprint race, with the Red Bulls starting 9th and 10th.
Well, likely.
Seeing if they can punch through the rankings in 20 laps or so. I think that'd be quite cool.
I'm going to do something I don't think I've done since I started hosting this format of the show. I'm going to go 5. And I'll tell you why I'm going to go 5 on this one. Because I completely agree with you, Devil Beans Coffee. I completely agree with you. And there is the reason why. Like, first and foremost, as a quick tangent, I completely agree that this shouldn't be an every weekend thing, because you are going to blow your staff up. Because I don't know if you watch MotoGP, Michael, but they've gone very similar with the whole sprint race as well over a weekend. And every rider I've heard interviewed about it has said it's now just so intense. Everything is now, you're on it from the first minute you're on the bike till the end of Sunday. It's relentless. And I can feel it being the way with F1 as well, where you're now on it from the start. You've only got an hour of free practice, and now it's all meaningful action after that, from that point onwards. I mean, going from 3 practice sessions to 1 is quite the shift. And I think, again, there's an argument you can have for it, and I don't mind it as a concept overall, but I could certainly see how that would blow some people up. The changes I generally have liked. The shootout is far better than a Parc Fermé FP2. That just serves no purpose whatsoever. I think the sprint doesn't solve the problem of, and I think the real problem is the action that F1 is providing right now. I don't think the format is the issue, and I still think the sprint as a whole is a bit too safe. If you're, hypothetical scenario, if you're someone like Nico Hülkenberg, and let's say you're starting this sprint from 15th place, you've got to gain 7 spots to get 1 point because sprint pays only down to eighth. There's no point. You're not going to do that in 100 kilometers of running or a third of race distance. And I also think...
kilometers on your engine.
Yeah, and I also think it gives a bit too much away in terms of how the Grand Prix will go on a Sunday. I think reverse grids do a pretty good job of masking some of that intrigue because you'll get more action. You won't give away precisely, at least I think you won't give away so easily how the Grand Prix will go on Sunday. So you're not devaluing the Grand Prix so much. And I think we're ready for it. As like you said, if you watch the juniors, because we both do, reverse grids are often a great indication of determining talent. And the entire reason they brought reverse grids in was to avoid people just dominating weekends.
Yep.
I think it tells you more about a driver and their adversity and their skill set if they can come through the field a little bit more consistently over the course of a weekend. So with all that in mind, I think if you're going to change your weekend format, which I think generally most people like, yep, as it is, go all the way with it. Go reverse grids, maybe reverse the top 10.
Yeah.
Similar to F2 in that sense. Maybe be a bit more generous on points. I wouldn't even mind them going to F2 where it's like 15 points for the win rather than 8. Yep. Reward aggression a little bit more. I'm going to go 5. I am all for this change. I don't think I've done a 5 since I started here.
Oh, really?
I think this is the first time I've ever gone 5. If it is, it's very, very slim. I've not gone 5 very often at all. I think this is the first one I've ever done it with. And I completely agree with you, Devil's Bean Coffee. I'm with you 100%. It's time for reverse grids in F1. Are you in the same camp as me?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to go with 5 as well, you know, especially like, you know, in my situation right now, you rock up to race weekends and you don't really know what you're going to get being in a lower team. And I think if you had something like that where it's a reverse grid, all of a sudden it's a little bit more extra bit of motivation that will go in the team because it's like, well, hang on a second. You know, if we get quali right and we've got that reverse grid, we can actually just at least have a pretty damn exciting Saturday, right? Like, because... Right. We all know that, you know, our potential on Sunday is it's we have a barrier, right? So there's only so far we can go unless we have some luck. But I think that would also bring in, like I said, the smaller teams to have a bit more sense of excitement and chance to make to win more championship points. So yeah, 5.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Michael, 110%. Take number 5 is from Owen Bagley, who says, and this is the Sonoda-based take that I was preparing you for, Sonoda has great potential and could defo be a race winner later in his career with the right car, maybe even a champion. Eyeball emoji. I love that. I love that just chucked in the eyes emoji there, give it, add a little extra curiosity. Sonoda has great potential and could defo be a race winner later in his career with the right car, maybe even a champion. Now, I'm not just saying this because Michael is here and he's Yuki Tsunoda's performance coach, I promise. I genuinely think Tsunoda's been one of the drivers of the year so far. I think he's been exceptional this year. I think he has clearly taken a step up. I mean, let's be honest, Pierre Gasly was probably a little bit better in the 2 years when they were together before he's gone off to Alpine. They've probably needed Tsunoda to step up now that Nyck de Vries is a talent. You know, I know he's won another series. He's a talented driver in his own right, but Tsunoda's got the added experience now. He's probably going to be... I saw Franz Tost say that, you know, we need Q3s and points. And Tsunoda's doing that. I don't know how you feel about it on the outside looking in, Michael, but I think he's been very impressive this year.
Yeah, no, the voices internally in AlphaTauri, that, you know, everyone's very, very happy how he started. Very, you know, he hasn't made any mistakes in quali. He hasn't made any mistakes in a race, which is, you know, something that we wanted to focus on this year because, you know, when he came in as a rookie, there were a couple of things, you know, he was making some pretty obvious mistakes. And that, I guess, that comes with experience, right? And I've definitely seen an improvement in his maturity and his approach to the races. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of just bringing in a lot of calmness. So, you know, we have a bit of a mantra that kind of we talk about a little bit about calmness and how we deal with adversity. We know that Formula One, there's a lot of parameters in this sport that's out of your control. And sometimes these drivers try to control what they can't control, and that's what can drive you insane. So,
Absolutely.
So no, there's, look, again, going to the question, I'll be honest, there's a lot of drivers that can win a race in the right car for sure. Like,
sure.
It's so, yes, I definitely do agree. I think if Yuki finds himself in a competitive car, whether it's an AlphaTauri or in a different car in the future, I definitely see very positive traits in him that I think he has the potential to win a race. I hate the P word. I hate potential because for me it means nothing unless you can actually do something with it. I never use it, and I'll never use it with my junior boys because it's a waste of a word.
100%.
If he keeps working on what he's working, because you know we're very in tune with what we need to work on. We're very in tune with what his weaknesses are. If he keeps working on that, I'm going to say that he definitely has the right capabilities to win a race, and hopefully that's not too far around the corner. And the championship thing for me, like, that's still very vague, right? Like, I think there's a handful of drivers that if they were in a strong car could win a championship. Just, you know, like, what's a strong car? Are we talking Red Bull this year? Because I think if anyone was at Red Bull this year, I think could win a championship. I think there's more than just the car. I think it's timing,
100%.
Where you're at from your career as well. So, from what I'm saying, I'm going to say, I'm going to go a four. I'm going to go four for Yuki. I'm putting a lot of belief in this kid. He's showing me some really, really positive things in the first 5 months that we worked together.
My honest perspective on Yuki since watching him from his F2 days, his speed was never the problem. He was always an incredibly fast driver. Right from I saw him in F2, he shot up through the juniors very quickly, got to F1. Speed was there, but inconsistent, made some mistakes. He's thrashed a lot of that out so far this season, and he's not finished a Grand Prix lower than 11th. And this was a team that was, you know, I'm not being mean when I say this. They were down the bottom of the field last year. That's just a statistical fact. And Tsunoda has stepped up. He's getting them in the right positions where they can potentially score points. And he has done a couple of times. He was unlucky not to get a point in this race in Miami. Race was maybe two laps longer. I think Tsunoda gets a point off Magnussen right at the end. But as I joked, hey, K-Mag got America some free tacos. So everybody's a winner, quite frankly.
Yeah, we saw K-Mag after the race, and he was sitting on the floor, and he looked up to Yuki and he goes, one more lap and you had me.
It would have been a nice revenge move from Jeddah, given that Magnussen beat him for a point in that one. And they had a great fight there as well. So we were denied a revenge match. We need that. We need that at some point, because they're two very fun drivers to watch on TV.
I think they'll have some more battles this year, I think.
I think so too. I think that the lower end of the field, I think, is a real bar fight this year. I think it's a very, very interesting the back half of the table. I think points are going to be at a premium down there. So there's going to be some intense fighting, because I think the value of a point is going to be very precious down there. I think the big four are locked out. I think Alpine are right around that sort of range as well. So we might be talking, you could have a really, really good day and maybe get 1 point out of it. So that's how I feel. And the fact that Sonoda's got two already, I think is very impressive. As you say about career and timing, to go back to Ermin's take,
so
many things have to go your way in F1. You know, you can be the most talented guy in the world, and if the politics don't work out, it does not matter. So I'm going to be on the fence. I'm going to say three. I don't normally say three. I've done it twice this episode. I'm ashamed of myself. It's not because I don't think Tsunoda is good. I genuinely have him down as a driver of the year contender so far. I just think the grand scheme of F1 is the problem, not Tsunoda's talent. And I agree with that one as well. So, like, I'm not surprised that Michael went four. What a cop-out. I've got a little secret for you, Mike. We kept one take in the back just for you.
Okay.
I promise you it's not going to get you in trouble with the HR department.
Okay.
But it was so good, we felt like we had to include it. It's from Kryn at Special Ciatech. Forgive me for the pronunciation. And he sent this one specifically just for you, Mike. He said, quote, Michael will continue to have trouble reining in Yuki, quote, I love food, Tsunoda.
He is so motivated by food, it's scary. We will literally fly into a place and he's like, okay, what are we eating today? And that's literally all he cares about. I'm like, well, we need to train first. Yeah, he's like, yeah, but after that, what are we eating? So I'm already organizing dinners for Monaco. And I'm not kidding you. So he's just all about, we need to eat here, we need to eat there. And for me, you know what? I don't want to rein him in because like I said right at the start of this podcast, my job is to make sure he's in a good mindset. And when we go to a nice dinner, whether it was, you know, Joe Stone Crab on the Wednesday night in Miami and had some amazing crab, he was just in like, you know, in a great mood. And we went to Nobu on Sunday night and he couldn't have been any happier. So my take, I'm like, look, a happy driver is always going to perform well. So I'm definitely not going to be able to rein him in. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to have to, I think I'm going to have to just take the punches as it comes and just like, okay, cool. You want to eat like that? Well, then you better train hard, pal, because you have a weight to make.
I think that's the first six on Hot Takes Wednesday history with Michael on this one. I can't really score this one, but I had to leave that one in for Michael because I had a feeling he might enjoy that one, and I'm glad he did. And I think that's some fascinating insight. Michael, before we get out of here, plug yourself. Tell the good people of the world where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Michael Italiano is my handle. Or if you want a little bit more info and services on my coaching, you can go to my website, www.michaelitaliano.com.
Also, could you tell Marcus Stoinis to go a little bit easy just in case there's an outside chance he makes the Ashes squad? We have to get Basball going. I'm just saying.
I'd love to see Stoin in the Ashes. I mean, he's played a lot of cricket in England, so I think he'd do just fine.
If not, we'll certainly see him in the 100, and I very much look forward. I'll be thinking of you now I see him out there. So I didn't know he was one of your clients until I did some digging for this episode, so that's very, very cool to see as well. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. Thank you for coming on. Thanks to everyone for the WTF1 audience for listening. We'll be back next week for another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday, but until next time, I've been Dre Harrison, he's been Michael Italiano. See you next time. Take care.